You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday the 12th of January 2023, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Once again, it's Thursday, and that means we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How is life treating you?
You know, we're dealing with shocking things on this show all the time, but the most shocking thing I've heard this week is that they take the appendix through the belly button when they take it out. I don't know whether to be impressed or disgusted.
Wow, I would certainly be impressed. I don't know what to say to that one. I really was not expecting that. But yes, that is quite incredible. You would imagine that they would do some kind of keyhole surgery or something like that. I take it you must have had a close experience with an appendix surgery this week, Matt. So I'm very glad whoever it was that had the appendix out was well. And I'm very glad that everything went well for you and that you're here today with us today to have a look at what is going on in America with its defense budget. And we're going to be using a global research article again by Matthew Eret Kump this time. He says bipartisan insanity was on display again this week as the US Congress responded to Biden's requested $37 billion in additional aid to Ukraine by giving him $45 billion, bringing the total US support to its Davos-managed disposable ward up to $111 billion. The aid was part of an overall omnibus spending bill passed by both houses of Congress for a gargantuan $1.7 trillion and included $858 billion in defense spending, which far exceeds any sum ever spent by a US government in history. Of that $858 billion, $817 billion is allocated directly to the US Department of Defense, while the remaining $29 billion will be allocated to national security programs within the Department of Energy. And I mean, that could be not really exaggerating, but really sort of overhyping this, saying that this is the most amount that's ever been spent by a US government in history. Well, of course, it's going to be more than last year, isn't it? With inflation, each year you would expect them to spend more on defense. I mean, I haven't actually looked into this, what last year's budget was. Is it a very large increase on last year's budget, Matt, or do they not every year they have a huge budget like this?
Yeah, there's always somebody who says that. I remember I was in college when the budget hit $1 trillion, and it was an emotional appeal sort of. Yeah, of course it's ridiculous, and don't forget, very importantly though, that as time has gone on, more and more funds are being sent to secret accounts, slush funds, so-called off budget or black budget institutions. I'm thinking that that's going to be happening more and more. I also think that the regime is going to start more than they usually do, raiding entitlement programs, you know, Medicare, et cetera, to fund the war machine. Because as tax receipts collapse, as corporations, you know, simply don't pay, the big ones don't pay taxes, but they get tons of subsidies, they're going to have a desperate time of it. Now, I'm not sure where all of these funds were, from where they were raised, foreign accounts, China, whatever, and which could, of course, those people tremendous leverage. Most of this stuff has to be borrowed, and that's getting worse. And it's just going to be a few years where the interest on the debt is going to be the biggest item. But forwarding that money to the U.S. government is one of the regime's most powerful forms of leverage. This is why banks do as they please, and this is why antitrust laws are now dead letters. No one gets sued for antitrust stuff anymore after the Microsoft disaster in the 90s. But because the regime is looking at a massive, even possibly two-front war, domestic spending is going to collapse while spending abroad, military, is going to go up. Now, the defense budget is more than $1 trillion. This only includes on-budget things. But there's even on-budget things from international relations, social spending in the military. There's a lot of things that just aren't present that don't fall under defense spending, but in fact are defense spending, including Homeland Security, the militarized departments of the federal government, all of which are involved in what the Defense Department is supposed to do. So, and that's why this is misleading. It's much higher than this, not even including off-budget items.
So it's much higher than this, and there's very little accountability for where it goes. And it's not just going to Ukraine. Taiwan is also getting money in this. 2023 NDAA funds will be used to strengthen Taiwan in the Pacific, with $12 billion authorized to assist Taiwan in purchasing weapons from the U.S. military industrial complex, with the $12 billion in loans needing to be paid back over the course of the next 5 years, of course. Of this fund, $100 million will be given directly to contractors to fill up a contingency stockpile to be used by Taiwan in case of any future conflict. Additionally, Taiwan will be invited to participate in the next US-led Rim of the Pacific military exercise in 2024, and thus a greater Pacific NATO strategy encircling mainland China. This exercise and the broader Pacific NATO, aka Quad, anti-China arsenal of puppet colonies will be boosted by an additional $11.5 billion to be allocated to the Pacific Deterrence Initiative to counter malign Chinese influence in the Pacific. Just as Ukraine has suffered US-directed color revolutions in 2004, in 2014, so too has Taiwan been strung through a similar NED-funded Sunflower Revolution regime change in 2014, which saw the Kuomintang Party taken out of power, just as final stages of an economic integration agreement with mainland China were being finalized. And this is actually the first time that I've actually heard of this Sunflower Revolution taking place in Taiwan. I guess we were all concentrating on what was happening in Ukraine at the time. What can you tell us about this Sunflower Revolution in 2014 in Taiwan, Matt? Do you know?
Well, these color revolutions all have a script, and the media report it like they've never heard of it before. These are Western finance organizations. They speak English. It's not as bad as Hong Kong, where every leader of that movement has a Western last name. Western first name. It was like David, there's John, there's Benjamin. These obviously don't have a lot of connection to China at all. They're essentially Americans. And the same thing goes for this. The only reason, of course, as you see, that this ever was developed was a trade deal with mainland China. That trade, even when it was illegal, that trade was something like $15 billion a year. They liberalized those laws over time with the ruling party, which is Chiang Kai-shek's party, Kuomintang. It was something that it's not unpopular in Taiwan, since we've even talked about the polls that say they want a gradual unification with the mainland. They don't hate the Chinese on the mainland. This was a popular idea. Of course, it was very much a part of Taiwan's economic recovery. And that's why it had to be destroyed. And, all the protest signs were in English. Typically the AIDS democracies and all these other programs were heavily involved. It was absolutely necessary. I mean, what this all comes down to is that the Russo-Chinese alliance that I've been saying for 20 years is the number one threat to liberalism, to capitalism, and the American Empire, or the banker's empire. Financially, in manufacturing, but certainly also in ideology and trade. The SCO, the Belt and Road Initiative, the customs union, all of these are growing by leaps and bounds, while the U.S. and its empire is declining to the point where you could see it almost every day. The money in the U.S. doesn't really exist for these things. This is all borrowed funds. And supporting these color revolutions is one of the things that are off budget, at least part of it. These are CIA operations. And the CIA, by the way, doesn't come under the Defense Department. So, and the point is to provoke a war with China and to provoke a war with Russia. We'll talk here in a minute about the Project for the New American Century and their report saying that we have to be able to fight a two-front war with two major powers. So this has been going on for a long time. But that is a typical color revolution. An unpopular Western-backed clique takes over. And Kuomintang, who ruled that country for a very long time, brought it from third world to first world status in a few years, somehow was deemed unpopular. Which, of course, this trade deal with China was popular. And it was extremely lucrative.
So America's partnerships are failing, whereas Russia and China's partnership is on the up and up. So they have to start encircling China in the same way that they're causing problems for Russia with Ukraine. They're also going to be spending money on space warfare. Billions have been tagged to purchase Lockheed Martin Corps' F-35 fighter jets and ships made by General Dynamics. But beyond the Air Force, one of the biggest and most dangerous boosts in spending this year has been absorbed by a fixation on space warfare. $5.3 billion will be directed towards Space Force and the ongoing effort to militarize space as a new dimension in warmaking in the 21st century, which was $333 million more than originally requested by military officials at Space Force. The recent US-Canada-Australia joint space warfare drills, in order to prepare for an upcoming war over Europe, took place at the start of December 2022 at the Schriever Space Force base in Colorado, which indicates that the residues of any positive memory of space diplomacy once seen under JFK's leadership, the 1976 Apollo-Soyuz cooperation program, or even the better aspects of President Trump's Artemis Accord, are now all used up. What do you know about the funds that are going towards this space warfare, Matt?
Well, it looks like NASA has finally found a reason for its existence. This is an organization that has delivered nothing usable to the American population. Now it's going to be another non-defense in terms of budgetary outlays, but still militarized aspect of the U.S. government. NASA had been declining its budget, its percentage, and in absolute terms, declining over the years. And now they've been absorbed into the defense regime. They have a new lease on life. Remember, all of this money, all of this readiness and preparedness was condemned by the left without fail when the Soviet Union was in existence or Communist China was in existence. Of course, that the old guard in China is long dead. The Maoists are long gone. They condemned all of this. And now, because this, sort of national socialist or social nationalist movement in both countries, Russia and China, is the target, now they can't get enough of it. Now they're talking about massive increases to the defense budget. And in a shocking turn, which we've talked about before, how nuclear warfare is now suddenly winnable now that the Soviet Union or Communist China don't exist. Mao's China doesn't exist anymore. China's not a communist country. Not by far. I think they have far more freedoms than the U.S. does. But and on space warfare, that was one of Trump's things. I think it was absurd. It's, beyond the reach of most people as to what's going on. But the militarization of space is what this is supposed to be. The Artemis Accord, which we mentioned, was a set of principles that NASA helped put out about cooperation with China and Russia. And other countries in the space program. It condemned the militarization of space and the use of this of space technology for weaponry. And Trump was attacked for even bringing it out, because the Artemis Accord implies that the U.S. is going to be cooperating with Russia. And actually mentions it by name. Roscosmos, which is their NASA, is mentioned right in the accord. So this was just more collusion as far as the media is concerned. So now you have the leftists who were the peaceniks in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, now are more hawkish than any Republican, now that nationalism in one form or another is the target. It's a completely different approach to military spending. That, you know, New American Century organization is about 50-50. It's mostly Democrats these days. I mean, George Soros is on it. Hillary Clinton's on it. Joe Biden's on it. And so this is war now is a leftist means to spread revolution. And that's what the neocon movement was all about.
Well, it seems that they're giving out more money as well than is actually being asked for, isn't it? That's what we saw there with the Space Force, the amount of money, $333 million more than was originally requested by the military officials. Well, you talked about the project for the New American Century, Matt. I think that comes up next. It would be a lie to say that this program for human extermination originated in 2022, or even under the previous presidencies of Trump or Obama. If one wishes to grasp the germ seed of today's policy doctrine, it will be necessary to revisit the Project for a New American Century think tank's September 2000 Rebuilding America's Defenses report, where the end of history cultists then taking the helm of government stated, RAD, or RAD, envisions a future in which the United States is in complete control of land, sea, air, space, and cyberspace of planet Earth. It finds objectionable the limits imposed by the ABM Treaty and urges a newer rendition of Reagan's Star Wars Defense Shield program. On top of calling for the USA's exit from the ABM Treaty, which was promptly done in the wake of 9/11, the authors of RAD outline in clear detail the rationale behind the growth of the rise of a need for a new branch of the military, known as Space Force. The authors stated that the USA must gain control of the new international commons of space and cyberspace and pave the way for the creation of a new military service, US Space Forces, with the mission of space control. Outlining the doctrine of full spectrum dominance, the PNAC report outlined on page 51, global missile defense, a network against limited strikes capable of protecting the United States, its allies, and forward deployed forces must be constructed. This must be a layered system of land, sea, air, and space-based components. And I did think when Donald Trump first brought this out that this was quite a new idea, but it can't have been if this was being talked about all the way back in 2000 with this project for the New American Century. What do you make of it, Matt?
Well, I remember when it first came out, I was at Liberty Lobby in D.C. at the time, and it was a big deal for us. I read it then. I've been through pieces of it since then. And it's a blueprint for creating an American empire, which then would privatize the entire planet. For the oligarchy. They don't really give a rationale. That document itself doesn't say why the U.S. needs to have an empire, except, you know, there's one vague reference to democracy. It does mention a new Pearl Harbor is needed for this, because this transformation of American defense from, regionalism to absolute globalization and being the military force for the oligarchy rather than from the United States. This was laid out, and the blueprint has been fulfilled. This is in almost every respect. I mean, it's called Space Force, which is mentioned right here, because this has, both parties in it. I mean, Jacob Rothschild sits on their board. George Bush. Anyone who matters, Richard Pearl. Elliot Abrams, anyone who matters in the State Department, the Defense Department is a member here. It's slightly tilted more towards liberals these days because that's the whole point. Privatizing the world means bringing it under liberal auspices. Today, of course, it means bringing it under the leftist BlackRock organization. And that's why suddenly, and this was, in the 1990s, people talked about the peace dividend, that, well, this Cold War is over. And we could reduce spending. a few years of this go in, of course, the defense spending was not cut, but not only was America's decline became more and more evident. And this was 2000. This is before they knew anything about what Vladimir Putin was going to do. And ultimately, the point of all this, it's economic, but to take these countries that have brought themselves out of the third world, Iran, Iraq before the war, Korea, Taiwan, China, and turn them into first world countries, that can't be. The very act of calling them authoritarian has nothing to do with their government. It's the fact that they're a successful competitor. That's what most of these wars are for. It's not an accident that these wars have occurred in places that were right on the cusp of first world status or have recently surpassed it. It's purely economic. You can't have industrial electronic powerhouses competing with the U.S. with a very different ideology, with a very different approach. That ultimately is why this has to happen. None of this would have ever been said when the Soviet Union existed. None of this would be said. Nuclear weapons, rebuilding, all of this, that would never – the left was screaming to cut the defense budget. The Cold War, I think, is largely mythical. There was never any sanctions on Russia, never any condemnations, including from the same people. Joe Biden went over there in the 70s and treated them with great respect, peace between the Soviets and the U.S. Now, both because of their tremendous success, their ideological subversion of the U.S., and their essential, national socialist mentality, they have to be destroyed. So this is not a new Cold War. This is actually the first Cold War, and they're going to make it hot as soon as possible. And it doesn't matter whether the U.S. can win or not. That's not the point. U.S. can't win, but at least it will weaken American competitors such that the U.S. can somehow regain those markets, regain those plants, and try to become a first world country again. China has long surpassed the U.S., especially when it comes to actual manufacturing, making things rather than financial derivatives, which is where economic growth comes from in the U.S. They're aware of all of this. And that's why the oligarchs have consolidated forces, both politically and via BlackRock, and are going to ram all of this through no matter what they have to do, including the killing of millions of people in a nuclear war that they're not talking about, they're actually planning.
Well, that is the next topic to come up here, nuclear policy and bioweapons. Looking towards the need to expand and modernize nuclear forces due to the possible danger of China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, and Iraq, the RAD authors stated, "Today's strategic calculus encompasses more factors than just the balance of terror between the United States and Russia. U.S. nuclear force planning and related arms control policies must take account of a larger set of variables than in the past, including the growing number of small nuclear arsenals from North Korea to Pakistan to perhaps soon Iran and Iraq, and a modernized and expanded Chinese nuclear force. Possibly one of the most dangerous and revealing aspects of RAD was found on page 60, where the authors outline a program that soon grew into obscene proportions in the wake of the 2001 anthrax attacks, which justified the later passage of Cheney's 2004 BioShield Act, as well as the growth of the 320-plus international biolabs run by the Pentagon. Describing the conversion of bioweapons from the realm of terror to a politically useful tool, the authors state, although it may take several decades for the process of transformation to unfold, in time, the art of warfare on air, land, and sea will be vastly different than it is today, and combat likely will take place in new dimensions, in space, cyberspace, and perhaps in the world of microbes. Space itself will become a theatre of war as nations gain access to space capabilities and come to rely on them. Further, the distinction between military and commercial space systems, combatants and non-combatants, will become blurred. Information systems will become an important focus of attack, particularly for US enemies seeking to short-circuit sophisticated American forces. And advanced forms of biological warfare that can target specific genotypes may transform biological warfare from the realm of terror to a politically useful tool. Interesting here, they're saying, you know, it's going to become blurred between combatants and non-combatants. That means civilians. That means that it's going to be acceptable to go after civilians. And of course, we learned when Russia went into Ukraine that there were all these bio labs that they had in Ukraine that were using germs, basically testing on these germs. And of course, America was saying, well, we need to do these tests for health reasons, but it's basically a testing of biological weapons that was going on there. And we had Victoria Nuland admitted there were all these, that there were all these bio weapons labs that were in Ukraine. So here we find 23 years ago, the project for the new American century, it's literally talking about getting prepared so that we can use this biological warfare against others. Not preparing to defend against it, but preparing to use it against others. What do you make of this, Matt?
You know, I kind of forgot about the 2001, the anthrax attacks. All of this was a hoax, of course. The BioShield Act is one of the legal foundations for the dissemination of vaccines of all types, including the possibility of using force. Most people don't know what the BioShield Act is, but allegedly it's a set of research grants with an international foundation. As of now, actually it wasn't that long ago, you had substantial protests in South Korea. South Korea seems to be the hub of American chemical and biological weapons research. I think the reason for that is part of the defense agreement between Seoul and Washington is that their customs agency can't inspect anything that comes from the U.S. that has a military application, which means they could bring whatever they want into there. And once people began to find out that there were many bio labs, extremely dangerous bio labs here, there were protests all over the place. But protests don't mean much as far as the U.S. Is concerned. What strikes me here is the phrase biological warfare that can target specific genotypes, and meaning that they could wipe out specific genotypes. I guess a race is real after all. Remember, Hillary Clinton put her name on this. And that not only is this wiping out of races or ethnic groups, a possibility and something that they're promoting, but it's also a politically useful tool. It's not terror anymore if the enemies of the U.S. are dying of all kinds of diseases. And again, as you say, combatants, non-combatants, you know, this had always been the left's talking point in terms of Vietnam. Now it doesn't matter anymore. These people have no principles other than power itself, and power for the sake of reducing transaction costs such that their corporations can become wealthier and wealthier, and reducing, and this kind of, the use of this kind of, this is straight out terrorism. And you know, it's a psychological element. It's to destroy morale. That's why buying up TV stations and controlling media around the world is so important. I mean, Israel has known this for a very long time. And it's not so much that in 2099, when this was written, that they were somehow prophetic. No, this was at the behest of those who were going to create this. They were well aware. I mean, this, every billionaire in America at the time was backing this. And the fact that you have both parties means that this now went from being condemned when the Soviet Union was around, now is in a bipartisan way cheered, including the murder of noncombatants and the wiping out of specific races. And really what they mean is ethnic groups. Given that this was, 23 years ago, most certainly by now they have developed these genetically specific chemical and biological weapons. And that's something I don't remember at the time. You still had some of the old peaceniks in the Democratic Party in 2000. They're long gone. But I don't remember any journalist then or now talking about this specific genotype clause here and what and the implications of that. For foreign and domestic policy. And I don't think you're going to hear about it anytime soon. It just proves that there's no principles with these people.
Yeah, I mean, that is what Russia was saying, weren't they? They were saying that these bioweapons labs could be used to specifically create bioweapons that would work specifically against Russian ethnicity. And that's not out of the realms of possibility. I mean, all different ethnicities are susceptible to different diseases. I mean, white people are susceptible to cystic fibrosis. Jews are susceptible to Tay-Sachs. disease. Black Africans get sickle cell anemia. There are all these diseases that are all pretty much almost specific to one particular ethnic group. So to create biological weapons that would target that particular group, they must have them if they were talking about doing this 20 years ago. Well, moving back to Ukraine, how will the $45 billion worth of Ukraine money-burning project be used? Well, that's not so easy to say exactly. What we do know is that $22.9 billion will go towards what Kiev will be expected to use to buy more weapons from private US-based defense contractors. And much of the rest will be enjoyed by NGOs and non-profits, which will more often than not be run by figures closely tied to those same creatures in the Washington swamp who voted for these bills. These uncomfortable facts were outlined repeatedly by the oft-slandered Republican Senator Marjorie Taylor Greene, whose multiple attempts to create some form of oversight and auditing of the handouts to Ukraine have been met with absurd levels of resistance since the special operation was launched last February. Even when such operations as the FTX crypto exchange, a major partner to Kiev and the World Economic Forum, was discovered to be simply a money laundering outfit infusing vast sums into the coffers of the DNC that were tied to Ukrainian operations, hardly a single Western Mockingbird press outlet made a peep. As the Pentagon Papers and Hunter Biden laptop reminded us, not only has Ukraine been run by a coterie of money laundering grifting politicians enjoying endless skimming of foreign aid, Pandora Papers revealed that both Zelensky and his billionaire handler Igor Kolomoisky were both tied to offshore shell companies representing hundreds of millions of dollars of stolen loot, but also energy firms like Burisma, which has been caught extracting revenue from the Ukrainian people the way silkworm farmers extract silk. And what happens if you find yourself among that precious minority of Republican or independent voices of resistance to this new plunge into world war? Just ask Representative Matt Gaetz, who has been called out alongside other patriots such as Jim Jordan and Lauren Boebert for not applauding Zelensky's pathetic speech in Congress this week. For the crime of keeping their hands from slapping in lockstep with the rest of the congressional herd, NBC analysts like Michael Beschloss have attempted to stir up a witch hunt, asking why these representatives refused to clap. Asking, I'd like to know why that was for two reasons. Number one, you're a public servant. We're allowed to know those things. You're supposed to tell us if you're serving in Congress what the reason was. Do you love Putin? Or are you just opposed to democracy? Or is there something else? The fact that these figures even dared ask where the graft was going probably touched a nerve too close to home, with the Pentagon itself failing its fifth consecutive audit in November 2022 with over 65% of its assets and expenditures unaccounted for. That's right, the government just lost track of $2 trillion in 2022. And you have to wonder why the mainstream media doesn't talk about these things. Why is it only the alternative media that point these things out? And why is it when people point out the fact that there is this corruption going on, you've got the mainstream press accusing the people doing that of loving Putin or being opposed to democracy? I mean, it couldn't possibly be that they're actually thinking about the American people and putting them first and want to expose this corruption. Oh no, it couldn't possibly be that they're decent people. It has to be that they love Putin or are opposed to democracy. It's incredible the way they just infantilize things, isn't it, Matt? What do you make of what's being said here about these senators and the handouts to Ukraine?
Well, it's a full admission of corruption. These aid packages, loans, assuming that their loans are a part of it, will never be paid back. I said 20 years ago, why is it that the regime pumps money into places like Ukraine or Kosovo that have no functional economy even then, and will never pay this back? Well, these programs are pretexts. You know, the U.S. government is really a series of corporate entities who have their people in various positions. This aid, you know, it's just like the aid after COVID, was, you know, they hired BlackRock. And they were the ones who dispersed it. Well, there's no difference now. How does this aid go from, House of Representatives, the IRS, the Treasury Department, to these countries and these people? Well, there's a million middlemen, you know, private sector actors who skim. There really is not much in Ukraine for this to be spent on. We know all the weapons on the black market over the last year, and it's actually been longer than that. You don't have an infrastructure there to reform much of anything. The government has a 0% approval rating there. U.S. government is not that much higher. And this is why this kind of totalitarianism, where if you don't clap loudly enough, you're going to be accused of all kinds of things, including criminal accusations, which this guy has hinted at. Coterie of money laundering, grifting politicians. Well, that's nothing new here. Most of these guys, I'm sorry, it's sort of the Ukrainian oligarchs. This Jewish clique has come to power by stealing from the country, by strip mining the corporations in Ukraine, and living off of foreign aid money. They did the same thing in Kosovo, and they're still doing it in Kosovo. The Pandora Papers came out showing Zelensky a small army of Jewish oligarchs. Kolomoisky, of course, is a Jew. Steal and then put this money in offshore accounts, and obviously it's never taxed. These are all millionaires and billionaires. And same thing for Poroshenko, same thing for all these guys. And you can't have an anti-corruption drive when there's no non-corrupt part of the society that you can rely on to actually do the reforming. There isn't any. But this is like the image of the Plain of Dora in the book of Daniel. You know, the children were thrown into the furnace because they were not singing and playing instruments and applauding the massive gold statue. This is shockingly similar to it. And of course, his speech was ridiculous. It's one lie after another. And Putin, I'll say this again, is projection. The failing, unpopular, unrepresentative U.S. government is projecting all of its hatred and all of these problems onto an actually popular, non-corrupt leader in Moscow. And there's a psychological element to this as the U.S. empire declines. And so I think the victims outside of, you know, obvious warfare are going to be people who rely on things like Medicare in the past. They're going to be raided. Social Security is long gone. And all they need to do is create a new disease or maybe a nuclear strike, and then no one's going to say anything ever again. The bipartisan nature, you know, this sort of thing with the of aid money, this is exactly what provoked the Iran-Contra scandal in the 80s. At least that's what they claimed. That paralyzed the country for a while. And yet far worse than that here, and now you have bipartisan support. This is purely ideological. This is the nature of the regime. This is a consolidation of regime power, and not just domestically, but abroad as well. And none of this should be surprising. This is what happens when you live under an oligarchy or a monopoly. There are no principles. There is no concern with freedom. There certainly is no concern with democracy in the sense of being representative or self-governed. We all know that democracy just means liberalism. This is an official ideology that's going to be enforced no differently than Marxism was enforced in the Soviet Union. They would never attack the Soviet Union like this, and they didn't, but they will attack those who put a mirror up to themselves saying, you know, we pulled ourselves from third world status in a couple of years. You are going from first world to third world status in the same period of time. And this, you know, media, the purpose of the media is to be the spokesman for these people. No one goes into media just to report what they see. It's ridiculous. They're being trained for just this role without tight media control, without tight control over banking and industry. None of this could happen. But creating, you know, the use of PR firms like the Kosovars used many years ago, the tight control using psychology of the cognitive processes of people, especially intelligent people. This is terra incognita for most of us. That's why political science doesn't really talk about this stuff anymore. Which is why they get rid of people who even bring this stuff up. All of a sudden, the left now wants nuclear war, and people have to ask themselves why. The media does nothing but run cover stories for these people. They're not supposed to tell the truth. They're not supposed to be objective. That's not their role. In fact, that's never been their role.
Well, that's our role, isn't it, as the alternative media, to actually say things how we see them and to try to be as truthful as we can be. Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.